We're starting here on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara yesterday left off with the problem with regards to the Braitot, whether Beit Knesset needs a Beit Dira in it or does not need a Beit Dira. The Gemara gave three possibilities of an answer to reconcile between the Braitot. One was Ha Rabbi Meir, Ha Rabbonon. If it does not have a Beit Dira, then the Rabbonon believe that it does not require a mezuzah, whereas Rabbi Meir does require a mezuzah. The other possibility is that Havaha Rabbonon, they're both Braitot written by the Rabbonon. Hadid Beit Dira, Hadalei Beit Dira. One case is where it does have a Beit Dira, one is it doesn't have a Beit Dira. Vi Baidemo, the third answer that the Gemara gave is Havaha Hadalei Beit Dira. Neither of them have a Dira on it, but the difference between a shul found in the major city and a shul found in the villages. Shul in the major city does not require a mezuzah, whereas a shul in the Kfarim, in the villages, does require a mezuzah, as Rashi says, that in the Kfarim, the shul has balav nikarim, that its owners are clear and discernible. So Rashi thinks that the tour for Beit Knesset comes from ownership. If the ownership is clear, then there is mezuzah. If the ownership is not clear, there is no mezuzah. On the other hand, the Rambam thinks that the qualification for whether a shul has mezuzah or not is that it's a makom kadosh. Just like we saw earlier on yesterday's daf, that a place that is kadosh does not require a mezuzah. So too, a Beit Knesset is a makom kadosh, and therefore it does not require a mezuzah. The way the Rambam defines it, and therefore, why is there a distinction here between Kvachim and Kfarim? The Rambam says it's because the Beit Knesset, the Kfarim, when it's owned by individuals, it's a makom kadosh, so why does it require mezuzah? It's because they used it, or they doubled it as a guest house. And when they had a private shul in the Kfarim, they didn't just use it as a shul, they used it for other options. So that's the case of Beit Dira here. Everybody agrees, and it's Chayvei Mezuzah. In a case where you have a room that people sleep in, or the chazan sleeps in, then it's a Beit Dira in the shul, then you would require a mezuzah, both according to the Chachamim and according to Rabbi Meir. If it does not have a Beit Dira, then it does not require a mezuzah, according to the Chachamim, the way that we paskin. Again, the Rambam says it's because it's a makom kadosh. Rashi says, because balav inam nikarim, because its owners are not distinct, and that's probably the case by most shuls today, which is that it's a makom kadosh, and it doesn't have distinct owners, despite the fact the minhag of Bnei Yisrael is to put mezuzot on a shul and the doors to the shul, but not because of a chiyuv mitzvah mezuzah. Rishtibo is the equivalent of if it has a Beit Dira, the rabbi, then you have both things. You have private ownership, possibly, and you have a Beit Dira attached to it. So in that case, you would require a mezuzah. On the other hand, most shuls don't have that situation, therefore they do not require a mezuzah. But again, minhag Bnei Yisrael is to put a mezuzah on the shul. So now the Gemara challenges that last answer that we gave, that there's a distinction between the shuls that are found in the cities and the shuls that are found in the Kfarim. V'atanyo, don't we have a brighter? Achuzatchem. Achuzatchem mitama b'negayim, ve'en Yerushalayim mitama b'negayim. Your possession, your personal property can get negayim, but Yerushalayim cannot become tamei b'negayim. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati elo makom mikdash bilvad. But I only heard that the places that don't get negaim is the mikdash itself. Ha, batei knesiot, u batei midrashot, mitamim b'negaim. That means that shuls and batei midrashot do become tamei b'negaim. Af agav de kvachim ninhu. Even though they are in the city. So over here you're talking about Yerushalayim. In the city of Yerushalayim, the shuls and the batei midrashot, according to Rabbi Yehuda, do become tamei b'negayim. That shows you that just because you're a shul in a city doesn't exclude you from the fact that it's called achuzatchem, it's called yours, it can have negayim. It could also require a mezuzah. Now the truth is that there are two opinions in the Braita. There's a Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara automatically assumes that Rabbi Yehuda is the one that's koveya, and therefore asks the question on the Rabbanan. Why can't you just answer that the Rabbanan hold like the Tanakama, and they don't have a problem? So Tosafot raises this issue, and he says that it must be Kaven Tlo Huskru Shum Tanaim De Plige Baha Milta. We don't find any other Tanaim that argue on this. Kim Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yehuda. Mistama Par Plugto De Rabbi Meir, who must be that the argument here in this Braita is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. So therefore, when you want to set up the Braita here, you have two choices. You can set up like the Rabbanan like Rabbi Yehuda, or you can set up the Rabbanan like Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Meir is the Baal Plugta and the other Braitot with the Rabbanan. So you can't say that the Rabbanan hold like Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir is found in the other Braita. So therefore, Tosfot says that the Gemara was forced to say that the Rabbanan hold like Rabbi Yehuda. And if they hold like Rabbi Yehuda, then we have a case where the Bati Knesiot and Bati Midrashot of the Krachim do get Nigayim. They do have Nigayim. That would be against the Gemara's conclusion before. V'afakav the Krachim Nenu. Ema, the Gemara amends the Brita to read, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ani lo shamati ela makom mikudash bilvad. They amend the Brita to read, not makom mikdash, but rather makom mikudash. Something that is mikudash. Now, by saying mikudash, he can include the makom hamikdash, as well as batei knesiot and batei midrashot. So he expands his opinion to include these other areas, because his determination now is not about makom mikdash, but rather about makom mikudash. So by doing that, we can then again say that krachim, the shuls of the krachim, are exempt from nigayim, or exempt from mizuzah, because Rabbi Yehuda also agrees that there is Makom Mekudash inside of Yerushalayim. Now the Gemara explains the difference between the opinion of Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Yerushalayim itself. In Yerushalayim itself, the din is that Negayim only apply if it's considered to be Achuzet Chem. Gemai Kamifelegei. What are they arguing about? Tanakama Savar Yerushalayim Lo Nitchal Kadish Shvatim. Tanakama believes that Yerushalayim was never divided amongst the Shvatim. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Yerushalayim Nitchal Kadish Shvatim. And Rabbi Yehuda believes that it was divided amongst the Shvatim. So the Tanakama believes that Yerushalayim was a national city, the national capital, owned by all of the Shvatim together. Yerushalayim as a whole was never divided up in the allocations, meaning that Yerushalayim sits on the border between Yehuda and Binyamin, but it was never allocated to any particular Shevet, and it belongs to all the Shvatim together. So if that's the case, then you don't have Achuzatchem. Eretz Achuzatchem is only a place that was divided, that was given to you as property in the division. If it was owned by everybody, there was no Eretz Achuzatchem. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Savar Yerushalayim Netchal Kadosh Shvatim was divided between Yehuda and Binyamin. It was owned by those Shvatim. Chutz mi Makom HaMikdash Bilvad. Mikom HaMikdash is purchased by David HaMelech from Rabbi Yehuda with the monies that were pulled from Bnei Yisrael. So that's the one location that has joint ownership. Uplokto Dahane Tanei. And similar to this, Machloka Tanaim Titania, Maya Bechelko Shel Yehuda. What was in the portion of Yehuda? Harabait, Halishkot, Vazarot. The Harabait, all the chambers, and the Azarot, meaning the Ezrat Nashim, the Ezrat Yisrael, and the Ezrat Kohanim is up to the Mizbeach. Ma'ayah b'chelko shel Binyamin. What was in the portion of Binyamin? Ulam, ve'echal, ubeit kodshei hakodoshim. So the western side of the Mikdash, the western side of the Mikdash, which includes the Ulam, the Echal, all the areas that are the Kodesh, Kodesh HaKodoshim, those areas belong to Binyamin. So the dividing line is by the Mizbeach HaKitzom. And there was like a projectile or finger-like projection that came out of Yehuda that went into the portion of Binyamin. And on that projection, the Mizbeach was built. Now, here it says the Mizbeach was built, but it's not really the entire Mizbeach. Gemara in Zvachim discusses that it's just the eastern portion of the Mizbeach and along the southern side of the Mizbeach that has the ownership of Yehuda. And therefore, the Gemara there says there's no Yisod. The Mizbeach, which has a base, the foundation, which is an Amah high, that's 32 by 32 Amot, that base, on the eastern side and on the southern side did not exist. So the Gemara there says, why doesn't it exist? Because Yehuda owned that area. And therefore, the entire Mizbeach, they want to keep in the side of Binyamin. So the Yisod doesn't go there. Ubinyamin ha-tzadik ha-yim itztarei alea lebola ha-kolei b'chol yom. And Binyamin was upset about this little area that Yehuda had and wanted to swallow it up all the time. Shneamar, chufef alav kol hayom. He was, now chufef here you can mean hover over. He was hovering over it all those days. As Rashi says here, the word chufef means to rub up against and to bump up against. That he was pining for that area. He was rubbing up against it. He wanted to get it, that piece that was from Yehuda. Fikach, because he pined to have this piece from Yehuda to him, Zecha Binyamin HaTzibik v'naseh ishpizchan legvura. He was the host for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shneamar uben ketefav shachein. Which is chofev alav kol hayom uben ketefav shachein. And between his shoulders it sat. That's where the Makom HaMikdash is. That's where, as according to Rashi, the Aron sat in the Makom of Binyamin. Gemara later on with Darshan ben ketefav shachein, which is like the shore. The shore's shoulders are higher than its neck. So Ben Ketefav Shechein means that Yerushalayim sits inside of mountains that are higher than it. It is not the highest point there. There are areas that are around it that are higher. We also know that Ein Etam, which supplied water to the Mikdash, was higher. That's where they originally thought to build the Mikdash, was in Ein Etam, because it's a higher location. It's 11 amot higher than the Makom HaMikdash. But then they said, Uben Ketefav Shechein, that it sits between the mountains, and in a lower location, so it's not the highest point. And therefore, Har HaBayit was picked for the location where Binyamin was. Now the truth is that this is somewhat difficult, because if Binyamin knew the division and what Yehuda had, obviously he knew that the Aron was already in his possession. And he knew that he had the western side, Yehuda had the eastern side. It was just a question of where that border was. And he knew that the border went over a little bit into him, so he wanted it. So why is it over here that he gets the reward of the Aron, if he already knew the Aron was there? The Marsha says that he didn't know. The only thing they knew was that a piece of the Mizbech, or a piece of the dividing line, went to Yehuda that should have been in Binyamin's portion. But they didn't know exactly how the division went. And that's what it means that he was zochet to the Aron. Others suggest that when we say here that he was zochet to be the Ushpizchan of the Gvura, is to tell you, he knew the Beit HaMikdash, the Aron, would be in his portion. But since he desired so much that piece that of Yehuda that came in there, he became the host to Hashem in other time periods, which is after the destruction of Shiloh. Shiloh, which is found in the Chelkah of Yosef. Then the Aron moves from there to different locations, plus they set up the leftovers of the Mishkan in two locations after that, which is Nov Ir HaKohanim, and Giv'on. Both of those locations, Nov and Giv'on, are found in the Chelik of Binyamin. So that's what it means that he became Ushpizchan to the Gvura, which is that not only is the Mikdash there, but even prior to the Mikdash, he becomes the area where the Shekhinah is found. Also, my brother-in-law pointed out that there is the famous Midrash by Yosef and Binyamin. When Binyamin comes and Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, says there that he cried on his neck. And so the Gemara there says Yosef cried on his neck twice because of the Shtei Batei Mikdash that were going to be destroyed. And Binyamin cried on Yosef's neck for the Mishkan Shiloh that would be destroyed. But how do they know that the neck represents the Mikdash? That's from here. Uben Ketefav Shachein. What sits between your shoulders? Your neck. So the description of Makom HaMikdash is Ben Ketefav Shachein. The neck that sits between the shoulders. So that's why Chazal see the crying on Tzavaro as being representative of crying over the Mikdash. So now, V'hai Tana Savar, Yerushalayim lo nitchalka l'shvatim. And we have another Tana that believes that it wasn't divided up to the Shvatim. So here we have the Tana that says it's divided between Yehuda and Binyamin. Now we have another Tana that says it was not divided amongst the Shvatim. Titania, Ein maskirim batim b'Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to rent out houses in Yerushalayim. Bethina she'ena shelahen. It's not theirs. You don't own it. V'lazar b'Rabbi Tzadok omer af lo mitot. You can't even rent out beds. And not only can't you rent the house, you can't even rent out the location. If people sleep there, you can't charge them for sleeping there on the beds or for their usage of whatever's there. The fikach, therefore, orot kodoshim balei ushpazichnin notlinotan bizroa. The people who owned, quote-unquote, these houses in Yerushalayim used to take by force any korban that balim brought, and the skins belonged to the balim in the cases of shlamim. Shami Chagiga, the Shami Simcha, they used to keep those skins by force, because as payment, meaning as a remuneration for the fact that they were allowing people to sleep in their houses. Amar Abaye, Shmamino. From this you conclude, Orach Aro. Proper etiquette is, the Mishpach Inish Gufa Umashcha Liush Hize. That a person should leave over the skins, Mashcha is the skin, Gufa is the canister, the empty can that you brought the wine in. So you should leave those behind for the host. That's the etiquette you see from here, that's proper to pay them or to give them that tip. In a case where you're paying for it, that'll be like a tip. In a case where you're slimy, you weren't paying for it, that is the actual payment for staying in that location. The machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tana Kamo, as to whether it's been tamei negayim or not in Yerushalayim, relates to whether it's nitchalka l'shvatim or not. According to the Tana Kamo, it was nitchalka l'shvatim, therefore it qualifies as achuzatchem. Since it's achuzatchem, therefore it can be mekabel negayim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, Yerushalayim lo nitchalka l'shvatim, therefore there's no achuzatchem. If there's no achuzatchem, there is no negayim. Only Makom HaMikdash, which wasn't achuzatchem, was bought jointly from a Rav Yebusi, there is no negayim. Now the Gemara continues and says, u'bekfarim mimitamei minigayim. Since when do the shuls of the kfarim become tamei negayim? Ba'atanya, don't we have a brayta? La'achuzah, ad shikavshu ota. Achuzah means until they've conquered it. Kavshu ata v'lo chilkua l'shvatim. If they conquered it, but did not divide it up to the shvatim. Chilku l'shvatim v'lo chilku l'beit avot. Divide amongst the shvatim, but not to the families. Chilku l'beit avot v'en kol echad makir shelo. Or it's divided amongst the families, but there is no defined ownership of the area. Binayin tamalomar uva asher lo habayit. The one who has the bayit. Mi shim yuchad lo. It has to be defined and easily discernible. Yatze elu she'em yuchadim lo. These are excluded because the shul of the parent doesn't have distinct ownership. So the Gemara says, Elam Chavarta Kedeshanin Miikara. It makes more sense. The way to reconcile the Braita before, the first two answers make sense. The last answer we can't use anymore. First two answers were either it's Rabbi Meir versus the Chachamim, or both Braita or the Chachamim, one has a Beit Dira, one does not have a Beit Dira. But this answer of Kfarim and Krachim being the difference in the ownership of the shuls, that we can't say anymore, because even the shuls of the Kfarim do not get Nigayim. So now we're left with the din, again, the din of mezuzah and the din of nigayim. According to Rashi, the din is the same. It's all about balav nikarim, whether the owners are distinct and discernible. So if the owners are distinct and discernible, requires mezuzah. If they are distinct, then it also can have nigayim there. So now, with regards to a shul and kfarim does not have distinct ownership. So therefore, it doesn't get a mezuzah, it doesn't get nigayim. In the kfarim, the shul has balav nikarim, so therefore it would get negayim and it would get mezuzah. The braitot that said that shuls do not get a mezuzah, even in the batei knesiot of the kfarim, you have to explain that in a case where there isn't distinct ownership, or the ownership's not clear in terms of, even if you have joint ownership, the ownership is not clear. The Rambam, on the other hand, divides up the issue and says that negayim has to do with distinct ownership, and mezuzah has to do with makom kadosh. So by the batei knesiot, if it's a makom kadosh, it's exempt from mezuzah. Whereas for nigayim, it's all about ownership. The determination of ownership is what tells you whether it can get nigayim or not get nigayim. So therefore, for the Rambam, you can have a case where the batei knesiot of the kfarim get nigayim because you have ownership, you have distinct ownership there. Whereas they don't get a mezuzah because it's makom kadosh. Braitot that said that shuls in the kfarim get a mezuzah, and that we explained before, because they utilize it not just for a shul, but for other beit dira, they use it for other purposes as well. So therefore you'll have a case where it's not a makom mikudash, and you would require a mezuzah. In Yerushalayim, it's interesting what happens inside of Yerushalayim. It depends if you can have private ownership. If you can have private ownership in Yerushalayim, then balav nikarim. So then there's no question about mezuzah for Rashi, and there's no question that there is nigayim according to Rashi. And for the Rambam, it would be the same. It's not makom mikudash, and it's private ownership, so you would have both things apply in Yerushalayim. If you think Yerushalayim is lo nitchalka the shvatim, was not divided amongst the shvatim, then you run into an interesting case in Yerushalayim. According to Rashi, of course there's no nigayim there, because there's no achuzatchem, but according to Rashi, there should also be no mezuzah, because there's no private or distinct ownership over there. According to Rambam, it's easy to explain. The Rambam says it's not a makom mekudash, so it requires a mezuzah. Ownership, that says no nigayim. So according to the Rambam, there's no nigayim, but there's still a requirement of mezuzah, because it's not a makom mekudash. But for Rashi, very difficult. How does he explain Yerushalayim? You have no distinct private ownership. Since you have no distinct or private ownership, then there is no nigayim, and should be no mezuzah. Yet we know that nobody says you don't have to put a mezuzah on in Yerushalayim. So what you have to say is that there's a distinction between the land and the house. Land was never distributed, but the houses were of private ownership. Since the house is of private ownership, it requires a mezuzah. But if the house is of private ownership, why couldn't they rent it out? Why couldn't they charge people for it? So something along the lines you must explain that was the condition of the ownership. The condition of the ownership was when they were granted the rights to build in Yerushalayim, they were granted the rights to build. Yes, it's your private home, but you have to open it up to guests for free. You can't use that private ownership to exclude others or not to host others. And therefore, part of the condition of owning the house in Yerushalayim is that you give it for free to others. And that's why they didn't have to pay for hosting in Yerushalayim. All right, now continue with the Gemara. Gemara now goes back to the Mishnah, Umatkinin lo kohen acher. We have a replacement kohen that comes in and fills in his place. Pshita, Yerobo, Sol, Kodem, Tamid Shel Shachar. If the kohen gadol becomes problematic before Tamid Shel Shachar, then the replacement steps in, and Mechanchin Oto, B'Tamid Shel Shachar. Then he can work the Tamid Shel Shachar, and that becomes his initiation, right, as the kohen gadol. Because the kohen gadol wears 8 bigadim, vis-a-vis a kohen gadol that wears only 4 bigadim. On Yom Kippur, there are different parts of the avoda. Some avodah is done with the 8 begadim, the regular begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Other parts of avodah are done with the 4 begadim of the Kohen Gadol, which are the white linen clothes of the Kohen Gadol, where he looks very much like a Kohen Hedjot. If you have this replacement come in, how does he get designated to be the Kohen Gadol? How does he attain status as Kohen Gadol? So if he starts out in the morning, then he will work in the 8 clothes, because the Du Tamisha Shachar is done in what they call the Big Day Azahav. And that will make him into the Kohen Gadol, because he worked in the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. It's called Merubeh Begadim. So that's how he'll become the Kohen Gadol. But, Ela Irabo Psul Achar Tamisha Shachar, the Kohen Gadol, the present Kohen Gadol, does the Avodah. It only becomes Pasul when you're entering into the Avodah Yom HaKippurim, which requires only the 4 Big Day Lavan, then Bameh Mechantchin Oto. How does he become the Kohen Gadol? The replacement steps in. He puts on 4 linen begadim. That's the same begadim he was wearing as a Kohen Hedjot. How does he become the Kohen Gadol? How do we make him into the Kohen Gadol? Some Rav Adar Baba Babnet, that there is something distinct, which is that the belt of the Kohen Gadol is distinct from the belt of the Kohen Hedjot. We're going to get into this in 1 second, what exactly that means. The Pasuk in Parshat Pekudei tells us that the Avnet is made out of Sheish Machzar, Tchelet Argaman, Talachani, which means that it's kilayim. Because they have linen, tchelet and argaman are made out of dyed wool, so it's kilayim. That's what it says in Parshat Pekudei. Parshat Pekudei, it's completely unclear as to who that belt belongs to. It's enumerating the clothing of both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot together, of them making them. And there it mentions that the belt, the avnet, is made out of kilayim. But it's not clear if that's referencing the belt of the Kohen Gadol, the belt of the Kohen Hedjot, or both of their belts. Completely unclear. The other time we have the belt mentioned, or the clothing mentioned, is in Achrimot. In Achrimot, it describes the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, and there it clearly says that all the clothing of the Kohen Gadol is made out of boots. It's made out of linen. So there we know for sure. So the one thing we know for certain is that the Kohen Gadol in Yom HaKippurim wears boots, wears linen. Everything. All 4 begadim are made of linen, including the belt. That much we know. We also know that someone has a kilayim belt. We don't know who has that kilayim belt. The 2 options are, the Kohen Gadol the rest of the year wears a kilayim belt, and the Kohen Hedjot wears the same belt as the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, which is made of plain linen. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the Kohen Hedjot also has a kilayim belt. And the rest of the year, the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot wears a kilayim belt. So that's the question here. And that's what the Gemara is dealing with. How did he become mechunach as the Kohen Gadol? Rav Adar Bava says by avnet. By saying by avnet, he means that the rest of the year, Kohen Hedjot wears a kilayim belt. So now when he comes to serve in the 4 begadim on Yom Kippur, he's wearing a different belt than the Kohen Hedjot because he's wearing just a linen belt. So Gemara says, Anich leman damar avnei toshel Kohen Gadol, zeu avnei toshel Kohen Hedjot, that the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot have the same belt. The same belt, meaning that they both have belts of kilayim the rest of the year. They both have belts of kilayim the rest of the year, then that is distinct. When he comes to do the avodah Yom Kippur and he puts on the 4 begadim, it's different than a Kohen Hedjot because he has a linen belt instead of a kilayim belt. L'man da'amar avnei toshel Kohen Gadol, lo zehu avnei toshel Kohen Hedjot. That the Kohen Hedjot has a different belt than the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol has kilayim the rest of the year. Kohen Hedjot has just a linen belt the rest of the year. That means now, when the Kohen Gadol comes to work on Yom Kippur, he's wearing the same clothing as the Kohen Hedjot. Then Ma'ika l'meimer, what's distinct here? For this replacement, when he comes into the Avodah, he puts on the 4 begadim, he's wearing the exact same thing he would have worn as a Kohen Hedjot. There's nothing to distinguish him as the Kohen Gadol. So how are you going to explain it? Amar Abaye, Lovesh Shmoneh, puts on the 8 begadim, Umapech Bitzinora, and he takes a pitchfork and he flips over some of the Tamid Shel Shachar. Because when he flips over the Tamid Shel Shachar, he accelerates the burning of the Korban, and that's classified as an Avodah. Kutu Rav Huna, Damar Rav Huna, Zar Shafach Bitzinora, a zar that flips over a piece, meaning accelerates the burning of a korban, chayav mita. So that shows you that as a din like avoda, if it has a din of avoda, by putting on the shmona begadim and doing something that's classified as avoda, that's what will make him into the Kohen Gadol. But Papa Amar, avodato mechanchato. Just by the fact that he does the avoda that is unique to the Kohen Gadol, this is avoda only that can be done by the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. So because of that, he becomes the Kohen Gadol. He's initiated through the Avodah itself. It's not through Merubah Begadim, it's not through Meshicha. It's through doing the Avodah as the Kohen Gadol. So Milo Tanya, Kol HaKelim Shasa Moshe, when it comes to the clay HaMikdash, the clay Sharet, over there, the ones that Moshe made, Mishichatan Mikadashtan, anointed them with the Shemen HaMishcha is what made them Kodesh, Mikan Veilech. Because over there it says, Mashachta Otam. Otam require Meshicha, but nothing else requires Meshicha. How do Klei Sharet become Kodesh after that point in time? Avodatan mechan chatan. Then doing the avoda with the kli makes it into a kli sharet, and that's how it attains kedusha. Hachanami, so too over here. Not only by the kli sharet, but by the kohanim themselves. Avodato mechan chato. Doing the avoda as the kohen gadol makes him into the kohen gadol. Now we're going to discuss this issue of the abnate. We have two mesorot. We discussed this many times. Ki'ata rabdimi. Later on, we're going to have ki'ata rabin. Demon and rabin came from Eretz Yisrael, and they brought with them the explanation of this machloket, and they have different versions of this machloket about the abnate, about the belt. Which is ki'ata rabdimi amar abnetosho kohen gadol, Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Shimon. A machloket between Rabbi and Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Shimon. Chadamar shel kilayim, v'chadamar shel boots. One of them says it was made out of kilayim, one of them says it was made out of linen. Tistayim. Let us conclude. The Rabbi who, damar shel kilayim. The Rabbi is the one who says that the abnate of the kohen gadol was made out of kilayim. Why? Titan, you have a brayta. Ein bein kohen gadol to kohen hejot. There's no difference between the kohen gadol and the kohen hejot. El abnate. Dibrei Rabbi. Rabbi says, what distinguishes a kohen gadol from kohen hejot is the belt. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, af lo evnate. The evnate is not a distinguishing feature. Eimat. When are we talking about? Inem abishar yimot hashana. If you're talking about the rest of the year, tuva ika. There's many other differences between a kohen gadol and a kohen hejot. Kohen gadol mishamesh bishmona. The kohen gadol has eight bigadim. Vejot barba, and the hejot uses four begadim. So you have four other things that distinguish the kohen gadol. It's not just the belt that distinguishes them. So ella, what does it must be? It must be that we're discussing ella labi yom kippurim. Must be on Yom Kippur itself. So if it's on Yom Kippur itself, then what you're saying is, based on this mesorah that Rav Dimi had, is that abnei tosho kohen gadol. Rabbi says it's shel kilayim, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says it's shel boots. So who's the one that says that the Kohen Hejot has a belt of Kilayim? It must be Rabbi. Because Rabbi says on Yom Kippur, there is one thing that distinguishes the Kohen Hejot from the Kohen Gadol. We know the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur wears only linen. So the only way he can be distinguished from a Kohen Hejot is by having a Kilayim belt. If the Hejot had a Kilayim belt. So that's what Gemara wants to conclude here. The Rabbi's of the opinion that the Kohen Hejot wore a Kilayim belt. Because he says there's a difference between a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hejot on Yom Kippur, when they're both wearing four Begadim, the only difference between them is the Abnate. That tells you that he thinks the Kohen Hejot wears Kilayim the rest of the year. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says there's no difference, thinks that they're both linen. They're both made out of linen. That the Kohen Gadol's Begadim are made out of linen, so is the belt of the Kohen Hejot. And therefore there's no difference between them, even on Yom HaKippurim. So that's the way that they explain it. Rabbi says, the Olam Bishar Yimot HaShana. Can't prove anything from here, just talking about the rest of the year. The Gemara is not saying, oh yeah, there's no difference between a Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hejot except the belt. Well, what if I have all the other four Begadim? The answer is the other four Begadim, it's obvious that they're different. Where they're saying there's a difference is in the common item between them, the Abnate that they share, there's a difference between them. That's what Rabbi is saying, as opposed to the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says they're the same. That means that the rest of the year, we're going to say that Ein Bein Kohen Gadol Kohen Hejot, the Abnate, Rabbi thinks that during the rest of the year, there's a difference between the Kohen Hejot and the Kohen Gadol, which means that Kohen Gadol wears kilayim, and the Kohen Hejot is going to be wearing boots, linen, because that's why they're different. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, no, the Kohen Gadol wears kilayim, and so does the Kohen Hejot wear kilayim the rest of the year. Now, since you could explain the brayta in either way, we have no way to determine whose opinion is which. We don't know what Rabbi or Rabbi Elazar Shimon holds. We just know that they argue about the belt of a Kohen Hejot during the year. Just a note here, Tosfot points out that the Riva believed, and it seems that way from the Psukim, that the Kohen Gadol had a hat, it was called a Mitznefet, and that the Kohen Hejot had a hat called a Mikbat, and they're not the same. The Mitznefet was a much shorter, shallower hat, and the Mikbat was a taller, longer hat. And he says the difference had to do with the way that the Kohen Gadol's Begadim worked out. He had to have the tzitz on his forehead, he had to have the makom to fill in, he had to have a place for his tefillin to wear. And therefore his hat, the mitznefet, was a shorter, smaller, shallower hat. Whereas the Kohen Hejot had the mitznefet, had the mikbat, which is a taller hat, because he didn't have the issue of the tzitz and putting on tefillin there with his hat. So because of that, they actually had a difference in their hats, which is not mentioned here. Tosfot says, don't think that this brayta shows you that that's not true. It says, because the hats are made out of the same material, there's just a slight difference in their size. That's not what you call a difference between them. Oh, this one wears a mikbat, this one wears a nefet. That's just a nuance in the clothing between them. And don't say that that disproves the position of the Riva. There is actually a difference in their hats, and you could say there's a difference in their hats. Ki'at Rabin, Rabin comes with a different misor, which is Amar. Avneto shel Kohen Gadol b'Yom Kippurim divrei HaKol shel Butz. Everybody agrees that the Avnet of the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur is Butz. That is explicit in the Psukim. That's from Achrimot, which says that all the clothing of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is Butz. B'Shai Yom Otashana divrei HaKol shel Kilayim. Everybody agrees the rest of the year that the Kohen Gadol wears a belt of Kilayim. I mean that Posuk in Parshat Pikudei tells you that the Kohen Gadol wears Kilayim. Lo nechukul avneto shel Kohen Hedyot. The only machloket revolves around the avnet of the Kohen Hedyot. Ben b'shar yom otashana, ben b'yom ha-kippurim. Obviously, whether it's shar yom otashana, ben yom kippurim, because the Kohen Hedyot has no distinction between Yom Kippur and the rest of the year. Sh'rabi amur shir kilayim. Now we have it clear. Rabbi says kilayim. Now we have attribution to Rabbi, that it's kilayim. V'rabbi lozer, Rabbi Shimon amur shir butz, that it's made out of linen. The machloket here, again, is about the belt of the Kohen Hedyot. The belt of the Kohen Hedyot. Is it kilayim like that of the Kohen Gadol? The pasuk in Parshat Pekudei is referencing both the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot, or according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, no, that's describing the avnet of the Kohen Gadol. What about the Kohen Hedyot? He wears boots, he wears linen, he doesn't have this kilayim belt. Amar of Nachum Yitzhak, Afana Namitanina, we have a braita that supports the version brought by Ravin, which is Al Bisaro. It says, with regards to the Trumat Adeshin, it says, V'avash HaKohen Midobad, U'michnesei Bad Yobash Al Bisaro. Al Bisaro, Ma'atamad Omar Yobash. The Pasuk repeats the word Yobash, despite the fact that it already said, V'avash HaKohen Midobad, U'michnesei Bad, you could have just written Al Bisaro. Why does it say Yobash Al Bisaro? Why does it say Yobash twice? It says, Avi Mitznefet V'Avneit Arumat Adeshin. Because the only thing that's mentioned in the Trumat Adeshin are two of the Begadim, which is Pelavash HaKohen Midobad U'michnesei Bad Yobash Abseru. So that only includes the Midobad and the Michnesei Bad. So that includes the tunic and the pants, the Michnesayim. The other two Begadim are not mentioned in that Pasuk, which is the Abneit and the Mitznefet, the hat and the belt. So now what does it say here? The word Yobash comes to tell you that when he wants to do the Avodah Trumat Adeshin, he has to have all four Begadim on. Well, Yobash. So Yobash is Armat Adeshin Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that you have to have all four begadim on in order to do the avodah of the Trumat Deshin. That comes to teach you, the Yobash comes to teach you that the begadim of the Kohen Gadol can be used by a Kohen Hedyot. Well, if the begadim of the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur, which we know are made out of butz, complete linen, can be utilized by a Kohen Hedyot, that means that the belt of a Kohen Hedyot is made out of linen, according to Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa believes that it's made out of linen. Rabbi Omer, shtei tshuvot badavar. Rabbi says two responses. There you have explicit. The Rabbi is the one that says that the Kohen Hedyot wears kilayim, because he's saying it's distinct from the avnet of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. The clothing of the Kohen Gadol cannot be used by the Kohen Hedyot because it just doesn't work. He needs a kilayim belt. The Kohen Gadol only has a linen belt. Ve'od. Begadim shenishtam shata bahen kedusha chamura, tishamesh bahen kedusha kala. Clothing that was used for avodat yom kippurim by the Kohen Gadol, you're going to downgrade it and use it for a Kohen Hedyot? That can't be possible. He argues on Rabbi Dosa for two reasons. He argues on Rabbi Dosa, number one, because he says that the clothing doesn't match. He says that even if the clothing matched, he still couldn't do it because it's moridim kedusha. You can't take the Kohen Gadol's clothing that was used on Yom Kippur that is really kadosh and use it now for a regular Kohen Hedyot. Says, I think you're wrong for two reasons. So that teaches you that Rabbi is of the position that it's kilayim for the Kohen Hedyot the rest of the year. Alamata malomer yobash. Then what does he do with the word yobash? Rabot eta shachatin. To include worn down clothing. So even though you have begadim that are worn down a little bit, that the begadim of the Kohen Hedyot, he doesn't have to wear perfect or beautiful new clothing. He can even use shchakim. Now, this may be a broader inclusion. It may not just be for Trumat Adeshin. It might be for any avodah he does, that there is a requirement that he wears the big day kahuna, even though they're worn down a little bit. If they are torn or tattered, then they are psulin and he can't use them. But if they're slightly worn and they're worn a little bit, then it's okay to utilize them. You would have thought otherwise, because we have a principle of eneiyut v'makom ashirut, that whenever we deal with things with the Mikdash and kedusha, we want to present our best leg forward. We want to only bring the most beautiful things to Hashem. So maybe clothing that's worn down would not qualify to be utilized in the Mikdash or worn in the Mikdash. The answer is Yobash tells you that it's okay. As long as it's not in tatters and not ripped, that's okay to use it for the clothing of the Kohen Hedyot. And that's the Riboy. The Riboy comes to tell you, despite the fact that you might have thought otherwise, we include it. Rashi brings a second interpretation which he rejects, which is that you must use worn down clothing. Because we have a principle when it comes to Hatzat Adeshin, that you're not allowed to wear the big day kahuna for the tzat deshem because the clothing that you use to clean up, you can't use to present before a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You can't do regular avoda with clothing that you're taking the garbage out with. That's not the proper way to be. So some want to suggest that's the case here also. The Trumat Hadeshim, which involves working with the ashes, you can't wear real, full-fledged, beautiful, big day kuna. You have to wear the worn-down ones. Rashi rejects it because he says, that's true by the Otsat Hadeshim, where you're taking out the whole bundle of ashes. There's a reason to say that. Trumat Hadeshim is just a machta. It's just a small shovel worth of the ashes, a little pan worth of the ashes, that we don't worry about you getting dirty and ruining your begadim, and therefore he rejects that explanation. Ba'azda Rabbi Dosa l'tamei, and Rabbi Dosa's l'shita to, which is the Tanya, and b'nicham sham, l'meid shetunuim gniza. The end of the avoda of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, it says that the begadim that he takes off, the big day laman he takes off, v'nicham sham, he leaves them there. What does it mean that he leaves them there? What else would he do with them? So the Gemara darshins from that, ma'amei shetunim gniza. They can't be used again. They're put into gniza. He used them once, go into gniza. Ridosi omer shalo yishtamesh ben Yom HaKippurim acher. No, v'nicham sham means he may not utilize them for the next Yom Kippur, but they may be utilized otherwise. What does otherwise mean for a Kohen? Hedyot. That's what his shita is. Shita is, yes, the big day Kohen Gadol from Yom HaKippurim are kadosh to the sense that they can't be utilized for another Yom Kippur. They can't be used twice. They're like pogum for Yom Kippur. But with regards to a Kohen Hedyot, he can put them on and utilize them. That's Rabbi Doso, the shita to. Tanu Rabbanan, Irabo Psul, Eminu Acher Tachtav. Kohen Gadol became Psul, something went wrong. And now they appoint someone else to fill in his shoes, to replace him. And this doesn't have to be on Yom Kippur itself, it could be any time. The Kohen Gadol is taken as service, they bring in a replacement, his backup. So then what happens afterwards? Rishon, Choser Lavodato. When the Rishon is either healed or he's back in service, he's Tahor, he comes back to his original position. Sheni, Kol Mitzvat Kuna Gadola Alav, Divrei Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, the second one is a full-fledged Kohen Gadol. You actually have two Kohenim Gadolim at this point in time. Yossi Omer, Rishon Choser Lavodato. The original one goes back to be the Kohen Gadol. Sheni, Ein Roi, Lola Kohen Gadol, Lola Kohen Hedyot. The second one is in a twilight zone. He's stuck because he can't be a Kohen Gadol and he can't be a Kohen Hedyot. The reason is that Malim Bekodesh, Vein Moridin, so he can't go back to being a Kohen Hedyot. But he also can't be the Kohen Gadol because of Eva. We can't have two people be the Kohen Gadol. Can't have two people share the mantle. I'm Rabbi Yossi Masabi Yosef Ben Ilaim, Mitzipori. Shirabo Psul be Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol became Pasul and Minu Otachtav. He was appointed to replace him. Amru Chachamim Rishon Choser Lavodoto. The first one goes back. The original Kohen Gadol at that time goes back. Sheni Enurayo Lolo Kohen Gadol Lolo Kohen Hedyot. He, Yosef Ben Ilaim, is stuck now. Kohen Gadol Mishum Eva. Can't be the Kohen Gadol because then it's too much jealousy, competition, that we can't allow him to be, because the original guy is going to be, wait, hey, what's this guy doing here? He's taking over my position. Kohen Hedyot, Mishum Malim Mikodesh, Velo Moridin. He can go up in Kedusha, but he can't drop back down in Kedusha. Very interesting. Tosafot discusses it over here. What is exactly does it mean that Kohen Gadol, he can't be Mishum Eva? And he says, Hikshari, the Re asks, well, that means that, truthfully, he really is a Kohen Gadol. The reason he can't function as the Kohen Gadol is because of Eva. He is a Kohen Gadol, and that's why he can't function there. So that means Midoraita, he is a Kohen Gadol. The Rabbanim goes there because of Eva. If that's the case, then why do you need the reason that he's not a Kohen Hedyot? Because Malim Mikodesh Vei Moridin. It has nothing to do with Malim Mikodesh Vei Moridin. He is a Kohen Gadol. That's why he's not a Kohen Hedyot anymore. Kohen Gadol Shalavash Bigdei Kohen Yodot Vavad Avodat Avodato Psula. Because he's Mechusar Begadim. So the reason he can't be a Kohen Hedyot is because if he works with the four Begadim, he fails to do the Avodah because he needs to be wearing eight Begadim. Because he's a full-fledged Kohen Gadol. So he says this, V'yesh lamar, Kohen Gadol mitmaneh bepeh u'mistalek bepeh. Kohen Gadol can be appointed through a verbal appointment and can be dismissed or retired through a verbal agreement. And he says, that it's determined by the king and his brothers, the Kohanim. And he cites as evidence of this the fact that the king was appointing the Kohen Gadol during Bayit Sheni. So he says that the king is involved. So the problem wasn't the fact that the king was involved with it. The problem was that they were paying for it. The king and the other Kohanim should agree to appoint a Kohen Gadol who is ra'oi to be the Kohen Gadol, not get paid or bribed to appoint the Kohen Gadol. But he says that there is an ability to dismiss or appoint the Kohen Gadol based on that verbal assignment. And that's how they deal with the Kohen Gadol here. And therefore he could be, after the second one is taken down, he's taken down from being the Kohen Gadol. When the Chachamim says Mishum Eiva, but because Mishum Eiva, then we verbally say you're no longer the Kohen Gadol. That takes away his ability to be the Kohen Gadol. So then Malam Kodeshim Mordim takes in. That's why he can't be the Kohen Ejiot. Not because he is the Kohen Gadol. In terms of the appointment of the Kohen Gadol, in my mind I always thought that it's the Achava Kohanim, fellow Kohanim. I mean the Kohanim together come to a consensus and appoint the Kohen Gadol. And the Havdil, what goes on in the Sistine Chapel with the appointment of the Pope, may have come from this same way of appointing the Kohen Gadol. That it was done through consensus and built up that way. And it's very possible that the church took that from the process that was used to appoint the Kohen Gadol. So Sefot over here also introduces the fact that the king was involved in the process. It wasn't just consensus among the Kohanim, but the king also had to, whether he had to acquiesce to their position or he gave the options on which they were voting. It's not clear here from Tosafot how the king got involved, but from the Torah it seems like it's just Echava Kohanim. It's just the consensus of the other Kohanim that leads to them to pick who the Kohen Gadol should be. Amar Rabbi Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan, Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi. Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi, meaning that he's in twilight zone. He can't return to the original position. Umode Rabbi Yossi, so this was Fred's question, which is, Shimavar Vavod Avodato Kshira. If he goes ahead and he does the Avoda, he is Kshira. Rashi says, Shimavar Vavad Bishmona Bigadim, if he acts as a Kohen Gadol. Right, if he takes the big day Kohen Gadol, goes in and does the Avoda is okay. Because he does have, quote unquote, the status of a Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yehuda, Amarav, Halacha Ki Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yehuda Amarav says, Halacha is also like Rabbi Yossi. And he says, Umode Rabbi Yossi, Shimake Bishon Shechozer Lavodato. That if the first one dies, then the second one can come in and fill in his place. I mean, we do pshita, of course, why not? The other one's dead now, there's no eva. Pshita, marutei, mahavaleit, tsara, michayim. Since he was a competitor, a co-Kohen Gadol in the lifetime of the first Kohen Gadol, that will disqualify him from becoming the Kohen Gadol after the first one dies. Because the other one knows that he's sitting there waiting for him to die, that maybe that's enough to say you're disqualified, we're not going to let you do. That's like Eva. The answer is no, Kamash Malan, that he can become the Kohen Gadol. So that means that this replacement, number one, loses his status as Kohen Gadol, but also cannot be Kohen Ejot. So he sits in that twilight zone. If he does the Avoda, if he acts as a Kohen Gadol, then it does qualify. Avoda is okay, it's not Pasul the Gamre. And lastly, if the first Kohen Gadol passes away, he can replace him then and come in to replace him.
He steps in.
It sounds like from the halacha here that he would step in automatically because they've already vetted him. Right. And since he's already vetted, then assuming nothing has changed, then he could step in without having to appoint someone else. Unless someone else has risen in the ranks that should be better than him, then maybe there's a consideration. Alright, so that's the halacha. Tosfot says, interesting question. He says, I don't understand, why doesn't the Gemara say here, Teima, Hilchot HaMashicha? The Gemara never passes halacha unless it's relevant. What is this relevant for? Telling us that Rabbi Yossi, Halacha Rabbi Yossi, has no relevance today. It's only relevant when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, Bezrat Hashem, Lahav, Mashiach, B'mei Rabbi Ameinu, that'll be relevant. The Gemara in other places in Shas, where the Gemara says Halacha about things that are deal with Kedusha and Kodshim, they say, Halacha Lem the Mashiachas. What, you're giving us Halacha for the time of Mashiach? We don't need that. We'll pass him then, when Mashiach comes. We don't need to pass him now. So Tosfot says, you know what? This is Halacha Lemaisa, not just Halacha Le'atid Lavo, because this has to do with positions of power. When you have positions of power, positions of authority, and for whatever reason the person that is in authority has to step aside for a short period of time, and you put in a replacement. What is the din of that replacement? So that's what the Gemara here also determines. It's determinant for that as well, which is that when the first one comes back, first of all, he gets his position back again. Number two is, the second one still has a certain status because he served as the replacement. And he can also fill in when the other one is finished that position, whether he retires or he dies, then he can also fill in his shoes. So he says it has practical ramifications, not just Hilchot HaMashicha. Okay, we'll stop over here.